There was an aqueduct at Segovia, Spain, that was built in the year 109 AD. And for 1800 years, it carried cool water from the mountains to the hot and thirsty city. Then, at the end of the 19th century, the people of Segovia had an idea. They thought, this aqueduct is a great marvel. It ought to be preserved for future generations. It should become a museum piece. We believe that we need to relieve it of its centuries-long labor. They did. They laid modern iron pipes. They gave the ancient bricks and mortar a reverent rest. And do you know what happened to that aqueduct? It began to fall apart. The sun beating on the dry mortar caused it to crumble. The bricks and the stone sagged and threatened to fall. What ages of service could not destroy, idleness disintegrated. There is an important lesson here for us today that gets to the heart of today's gospel reading. How easy it is for us, like James and John, to want to be served rather than to learn the way of service. That we can adopt this attitude of idleness. And what sets in is life loses its purpose. It loses its meaning. It begins to disintegrate. For you see, James and John had it in their minds that we know that Jesus is talking about this kingdom. King equals throne, and because he's a Jewish king, there are always thrones on either side of the king. Maybe we can get dibs in on those thrones. And that's exactly what they try to do. And then the other 10 apostles who don't get Jesus' mission become indignant with James and John because they think, hey, those boys are pulling a fast one. We want to get in there. And Peter might have been thinking, hey, I'm number one. Surely one of those thrones is going to be for me. But do you remember how Jesus responded to them? He said, you don't know what you're asking for. For you see, it's not mine to determine who's going to sit on my left and who's going to sit on my right. But boys, it isn't going to be you. Because you see, what Jesus was anticipating wasn't reigning in some glorious heavenly kingdom with thrones and diamonds and all sorts of jewels. No, the only throne that Jesus had was the throne of the cross. And those who would be on either side of him would be those two thieves, one reigning on his left, one reigning on his right. And he says to James and John, although you will not be on those thrones, you will share in the baptism of my suffering. You will drink the cup of my blood. And of course, he is anticipating that of the 12 apostles, James would be the first apostle to be martyred. And although it's true that St. John was not martyred for his faith, can you imagine this job? Being on the island of Patmos in the heat of the summer sun, being in your 80s, and having to quarry rock. That's what John was doing when he was an octogenarian. And of course, while he was doing that, he was also inspired to write the Revelation. And so Jesus, you see, was wanting the 12 to realize that it was only when they came to understand the significance of his death that they would truly appreciate what it means to serve. In my study this last week, I found out something I didn't know before, that Vatican II, and I did know this. Did you know, though, that Vatican II is the longest meeting ever held in the history of the world? It was the biggest meeting ever held in the history of the world. From October of 1962 to the Feast of the Immaculate Assumption on the 8th of December 1965, all of the bishops of the Catholic world came to Rome four times to deliberate. And they wrote the documents of Vatican II. And the verse that they quoted more often than any other verse in those documents goes like this. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The Vatican II fathers understood this to be Jesus' mission statement, and they also understood this is to be the mission statement for the Roman Catholic Church at the end of the 20th century and going into the 21st century, for we do not have any other mission. A mission that begins with our appreciating more fully what it is to understand for our own lives that Jesus gave himself as a ransom. Now think about this with me for a minute. When someone is paying a ransom, they are paying a large sum of money to be able to deliver someone who is being held hostage, being held captive. And the Bible is clear from the beginning to the end that all of us without Jesus Christ are captive to the devil. We are captive to his machinations, to his ways. And at the very heart of the devil's agenda is, I want to be served. I don't want to serve anyone. And for thousands of years, he has been able to get his masterful plot into play. And perhaps no century like the 20th century saw tyrants, saw those who lorded their power over their people. Countless millions upon millions upon millions of people were killed because of leaders who, in the words of Jesus, didn't come to serve, but to be served. And so Jesus wants us to understand that his ransom, paid on your behalf, on my behalf, is one that each person has to appropriate for themselves. That Old Testament lesson was taken from Isaiah chapter 53. We only had two verses of that passage, but it's part of a much larger poem called the Suffering Servant Song of Isaiah 52 and 53. For those of you who love music, there's no piece of music that is perhaps greater than Handel's Messiah. And in that piece, in part two, the very first chorus of part two has these words. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. That's Isaiah 53, just before today's text. And maybe some of you have that chorus going through in your mind right now. And one of the things that Handel does so beautifully with music, he paints the words. And when he gets to those words, they've all gone astray, the music goes haywire. It goes all over the place. And then when it comes to, and he has laid the iniquity on him, there is this confidence in the harmonies of that chorus that resonate with the truth of this text. Now, with that in mind, listen to the ransom language of today's passage one more time. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him with pain. When you make his life an offering for sin, the righteous one, my servant, shall make many righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. Jesus, the righteous one, bearing our iniquities, paying our ransom. And beloved, here's the thing we all need to hear. This is for each of us to understand what Jesus Christ has done for you, to understand the price that he has paid. And there's something that happens in the lives of people who have this true conversion of heart, and they realize that apart from Christ, I would still be held captive by the devil. And what is it that Isaiah said? The righteous one makes you and me righteous. That's good news. And in our psalm for today, Psalm 33, there's a beautiful expression of what it means to be made righteous. Listen to what the psalmist writes. Truly the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his steadfast love. That's what happens in our lives. When we know that Jesus died for Jonathan, when Jesus died for and put your name in there, we know that his steadfast love is upon us. We know what it is to be people of hope. For the psalm goes on to say, and to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Now, of course, that's ultimate death. But it's also, we don't have to go walking through this world as if we're half dead. We can live being people who are fully alive. And we don't have to go through this world being spiritually hungry. For you see, there are so many today who are starving spiritually because they do not know Jesus Christ. They are starving spiritually because they don't even know they have a soul. They are starving spiritually because they think the material world is all we've got. That's a famine. But we are given the profound gift of knowing that there is a source of refreshing water. And that's the beautiful thing about the kingdom of heaven, about the church. For you see, beloved, the Roman Catholic Church is the Segovia Aqueduct that is to bring the living waters of the gospel to a thirsty world. And the wonderful thing about the church is when she understands her mission, she will not be a museum piece. When she understands her purpose, she will say it is the same as Mark chapter 10, verse 45. We are here to serve, not to be served. Through the month of October and into November, I'm using the word stewardship in all of my sermons. Because the word stewardship is a beautiful Christian word. It means that the property of another has been entrusted to our care. The property of another is Jesus. And his property has been entrusted to us. And its most particular expression is here at St. Peter's in our parish. We are called to be stewards. Pope Benedict XVI said that there are three dimensions of the church's stewardship: evangelization, worship, and service. Next week, I'm going to talk about evangelization. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be talking about worship. But today, the focus is on service. And the beautiful thing I find about St. Peter's, this is a vital aqueduct. This is a parish that is alive because we are a parish that serves. But if you went into a parish that had no service ministries, it would be like a museum. It would lose its sense of meaning and purpose. And so we hear Jesus say to us, the one who has ransomed us, "Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all." This is a spiritual principle. It's truth, because it's taught by God. That as we learn the way of service, we will learn the way of life. Now, there are all sorts of ways people in your lives are doing this in your personal lives. But I just want to focus now for a minute on the ways we serve here at St. Peter's. Those who work in the audiovisual booth, the CWL, the Knights of Columbus, our server team, those who do all of the church linens, feed the hungry, those who decorate our sanctuary and our grounds, funeral lunches, the gardens, recycling, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. And there are others, but these are key ministries here at St. Peter's. For those of you who are involved in any of these ministries, I want to thank you. Because in serving in this way, you are helping St. Peter's to be a vital community. Now, on the first Sunday of Advent, which is going to be December the 2nd, we're going to have tables set up throughout the narthex. And the focus on that Sunday is for all of our service ministries. So people who are involved in leading these ministries, they will be behind these tables to share with you what the work of this ministry is. And you might think, oh, I'm called to be involved in one of these. You can sign up and begin to participate. For in conclusion, I want you to know that the way of service is the way that is like the Segovia Aqueduct. We can bring the vital water of Jesus' compassion into the life of others. Because here at St. Peter's, we are living out the vision of Vatican II. A vision that says we are to serve as Jesus served. Because from his throne, the cross, he gave his life as a ransom for many. And that includes you and me.